This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, December 10th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Tech experts say Google's latest innovation could be a complete game changer. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the murder of UnitedHealth CEO Brian Thompson and the eventual capture of the suspected killer exposes social media's dual power, aiding justice while also fueling hate and anti-corporate backlash. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And once again, this demonstrates the duality of social media, starting with the fact that the picture of the suspect in the murder of Brian Thompson, of him at a Starbucks before the actual incident last week, which was shared far and wide, aided in his capture in Altoona, Pennsylvania. The ability to get that picture out there in as many venues as possible eventually aided law enforcement.
That's exactly right. Social media, I mean, look, this is in some ways an old story, meaning in terms of the impact social media is having on these kinds of communications. But let's start with the corporate side before we get to the perpetrator. The corporate side is almost any company, that's certainly companies we serve, they are all desperately interested in making sure that their message appears in front of as many eyeballs as possible. That's not new, but social media has allowed that. But what it's also allowed is sentiment about those messages to be broadly dispersed. And then, in the case of this tragic, really horrible situation, an individual who was angry at that particular corporation was caught because of the very same thing. So you're exactly right. It's a two-edged sword. There's hatred out there that seems to find its outlet in unmonitored, or at least generally speaking, uncontrolled conversations. And on the other side, there are corporations trying to tell their story as best they can. Health insurance is certainly a very, very sharp subject right now. And so that's one of the reasons this all came together. But you're right. The guy was caught because of social media.
But at the same time, though, and it seems like this is where the algorithm that controls social media is really causing some very harmful effects to society, is that it's not just debate over health insurance. It seems like the most antisocial, borderline criminal, taking glee in someone's death content gets boosted to the top. And if you like that dopamine hit from all of the attention, you're going to do it again, or you're going to engage in it yourself. And as a result, you have merchandise celebrating the killer. You have people having street art in Chicago and elsewhere going straight to the top of the social media algorithm. And you have negative review bombing of the McDonald's where this guy was eventually caught. And that seems like that's where the reckoning is going to have to happen, is that you have social media that now encourages this type of behavior.
That's exactly right. I think if you look at it sort of visually, algorithms have basically made it so that it's sort of like chips on a poker table, where everybody sort of grabs the chips and shoves them all into one pile. In other words, there's no middle ground. So the messaging, the algorithms basically sort because it makes money for the platforms, but they sort messages by their extremity. In other words, how extreme is it? And so if it gets extremely, if it gets extreme, it attracts eyeballs. As you said, there's a dopamine hit, and folks who are mildly angry might get drawn into a very angry conversation, get caught up in it. And there's no middle ground between that and the folks on the other side who are saying, this is insanity. This person was murdered. He has a family. This is not cool. You cannot have this kind of behavior. So you're right. Algorithms basically accelerate intention. They accelerate impulse. And to the extent that they can, they gather all that together. Results, you do get I'm speaking personally, but I think, you know, a sick celebration of someone's murder. I understand there are people who are very, very upset. Look, the healthcare industry in the United States is not without its critics, and I think many of those critics have valid criticism. But instead of valid criticism in the middle, the algorithms of these social media platforms have dragged people into one camp or another, mostly in opposition to the camp they're not in.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, Google's new quantum chip promises groundbreaking innovation.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Google has unveiled a new chip in what the tech giant says will be a game-changing innovation. Joining us with the details is Chris Stegg, chief technology officer with the E Group in Chicago. Chris, thank you for joining us today. It's called Willow, and this could be a breakthrough in the field of quantum computing.
Indeed, and it's under the category of weird science, because in quantum computing, unlike conventional computers and cell phones that we use today, everything's a ones or a zero. But with quantum mechanics and quantum computers like Willow, the state of the actual ones and zeros can be either. So it is a very strange principle that if you'd seen the movie Matrix, you might apply to Keanu Reeves being in two places at once. That's how the electrons are. And it's monetizing Google's stock price right now. I think it's up at about 5% the last time I looked, but it's got nothing to do with revenue. The commercial applications of quantum computing won't likely be ready until 2030, but it's certainly a fascinating and massive number of improvements to the technology that they're researching.
And on top of that, some of the numbers that are being thrown out as far as the computing power of the Willow chip and how quickly it can solve certain problems compared to supercomputers. I mean, this thing leaves the cray in the dust.
Indeed. And it's an amazing number of zeros, 19 zeros. That number is 10 septillion, but that's how long it would have taken today's traditional, conventional ones and zeros kinds of computers to make this calculation. And it, in Google's research, took 5 minutes. And that's hard to imagine what that could do. But if you think of the hardest problems that we have, energy storage, battery technology for electric cars, cancer research, drug discovery, it's in these commercial applications that traditional computers just won't cut it. And that's why the market's reacting like it is with the science behind this announcement, because there's implications commercially in years to come.
And there are also implications for the Chicago area, where Governor Pritzker and local officials are trying to really make sure that Chicago plants its flag in the quantum computing frontier. And even though, as you say, like the commercial applications may not show up until the end of the decade, the Chicago area is trying to position itself to be the quantum computing place to be when quantum computing has its moment.
Right. Yeah. And I hope that all goes through. It's still in planning phase, but the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park is scheduled for the old U.S. Steel Southworks site close to Argonne and the University of Chicago, where a lot of current quantum computing research goes on. And this isn't just a local and or national technology. This has a lot of implications globally. The U.S. wants to invest in areas like this, because if the nations with which we are not allies can capitalize on this technology, it can also do some very bad things, not just the good that I explained a minute ago. But in about those same 5 to 7 year time period, all the encryption algorithms that we use today to safely bank and to use our applications like even Signal, the most secure means of using texting messages, those can be broken by quantum computers, because the algorithms that we've used for many years, in spite of their technology today being bulletproof, quantum computers can unpack that encryption and get into government secrets and businesses that today are using the latest and greatest, but are at risk in the future. So the race is on, both commercially and for governments.
And then very quickly, Chris, we talk about the power supply needed for quantum computing to work. Given the tech of the Willow chip, does that solve the power supply problem, or will that exacerbate electricity needs in years to come?
It's still too early to tell. The really compelling part of the research that I saw, Rob, was that Google, in fact, created an algorithm to correct its own errors. The larger these quantum computers get, the more likely they are to commit problems. And what Google really solved was the ability to solve its own errors on the fly, which can, in theory, make these things smaller and don't have to be so big to do the job. So the jury's still out exactly on how power consumption it can be used, although it's a great point, and I'm under the impression Microsoft is building 9 data centers right now just to calculate and accommodate its current growth trajectories. We need something to solve that globally for global warming purposes.
Chris Stagg, Chief Technology Officer with the E Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today, talking about Willow, the quantum computing chip from Google.
It's the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's Travel Tuesday, part one on the Noon Business Hour. Celebrate your dry January success with a sober vacation. Joining us to explain is Cindy Richards, Editor-in-Chief of SheBuysTravel.com, based in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And so many vacations or resort options center around eating and drinking, because it's a nice change of pace from what you do at home. But what if you just want to do the eating part, hold the drinking? It seems like there are some options for you.
Well, there's an increasing number of options for you, which I find very interesting. You know, this whole idea of sober vacations really started, came out of, you know, the recovering alcoholics who wanted to be able to go on vacation with fewer temptations. But, you know, these days, there are a lot of people who are voluntarily going sober, either for the month of January, like you mentioned, or, you know, young people who really aren't that interested in drinking. So they're looking for places where they can go on vacation and have just as much fun without having, you know, a drink or a glass of wine at dinner.
Now, some of these sober vacation options, tour companies, it seems like they revolve around physical activity as well. It's a lot of hikes, a lot of adventures, a lot of time in nature. Is that a common component?
Yeah, I think that the best places to find, certainly tour companies that are doing sober vacations, and they often are organized around the idea of recovering alcoholics, so they're about not having temptations. But anybody who wants to do a sober vacation just because they don't feel like drinking, choosing a wellness vacation, like going to a spa or going to a yoga retreat. You're not going to get a lot of drinking at a yoga retreat. You know, cultural experiences, a Middle East vacation, you know, you can't, it's really hard to drink in the Middle East. So if you wanted a sober vacation, you could do something like that, some international adventure where drinking is not a part of the culture. You know, there's even ways you can do what I would consider a more traditional kind of vacation, like cruises. There aren't, as far as I've ever been able to discover, there's no actual sober cruise lines, but there's definitely sober cruises. Maybe 1 week or 2 weeks out of a year, a ship will create a special itinerary for people who don't want to drink, and you can book those vacations through a cruise counselor. You know, even on, I don't know the last time you were on a cruise ship, Rob, but the last time, actually every time I've been on a cruise ship, you know, you look at the daily planner of activities, and one of the activities is almost always an AA meeting. They call it Friends of Bill, and you go to, you know, some sort of secret part of the ship, and you have a support group to help you get through happy hour.
Cindy Richards, Editor-in-Chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, Part 2, choosing hotels or vacation rentals for family.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A baseball Hall of Famer who once played for the Cubs says his cancer is back. Choosing a rental over hotels for family vacations is a tough call to make in the planning process. Plus, a fast food chain puts its new beverage concept featuring milkshakes and coffee to the test. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed. The Dow is down 9 points. NASDAQ up 30. The S&P 500 is down just a fraction. 33 right now under cloudy skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. Legendary baseball player Ryne Sandberg, who achieved a Hall of Fame career after playing for the Cubs in the 80s and 90s, says his prostate cancer has returned and that it has spread. The 65-year-old had posted the news on his Instagram account this morning, saying his cancer has relapsed and spread to other organs, requiring intensive treatment. This comes just months after the former second baseman for the Cubs had previously been cancer-free. This past June, Sandberg spoke at a dedication ceremony held outside of Wrigley Field, where a bronze sculpture was unveiled in his honor. Shares of Walgreens jumped this morning and report that the company is in talks to sell itself to a private equity firm. Joining us with a quick update is Bruce Jabson, healthcare writer for Forbes, based in Chicago. Bruce, thank you for joining us today. What does this mean for not only Walgreens customers, but for its corporate headquarters in Deerfield?
Well, if indeed this happens, there have been talk over the years that Walgreens, you know, their stock has been falling because they had a rather disastrous investment in another Chicago company called VillageMD, attaching doctor practices and doctor clinics to the store, and they've lost billions of dollars on that investment, and the stock has been down. But Walgreens still has over 11,000 pharmacies around the world, about 8,000 in the United States. But when private equity comes knocking on your door, that means the company's long shares, we got, there's probably thousands of people up in the north suburbs that have been losing money on this deal who worked for Walgreens for many, many years. You know, the stock is up today. They'll get a premium if this happens. But I think the company, if they private equity gets involved, I think it would further downsize its store footprint. But they do have a lot of lucrative investments. They're investing more in specialty pharmacy, and most new drugs are specialized, meaning they're injected or infused, or they're made derived from biotech. They're not the pills and capsules that are all generic, which is one of the reasons that Walgreens doesn't make as much money as they used to be on spending drugs. So I would say if private equity does get involved and buy the company, I would say that the footprint, their store footprint, could change and grow smaller. But there is probably a need for Walgreens to get some cash and some new investors infused into the company, because the stock has been just kind of laying there, at least until this deal emerged in a rival news organization today.
Bruce Jabson, healthcare writer for Forbes in Chicago, thank you for joining us today with the update on this possible sale of Walgreens to private equity. Markets are mixed right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gary Kaltbaum, president, Kaltbaum Capital Management, and Fox News business contributor based in Orlando, Florida. Find him online, GaryK.com. Gary, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like the markets have been in a bit of a holding pattern until the inflation reports come out later this week.
It's all quiet on the market front this second, but underneath the surface, there's a lot of things going on. I think a lot of the momentum stocks probably topped out yesterday near term. Semiconductors continue to act like we're going into recession because of the United Health situation and that tragedy in New York City. Insurance stocks and managed care stocks are getting hit because the wonderment of whether they're going to come in and start looking at what's being charged. So there's a lot of jello moving on the plate right now, but overall indices are on the quiet front, and I don't mind that.
And it seems like this holding pattern may just continue through Inauguration Day next January, potentially, when we're in a point now where you can fantasize about policy and the reality will settle in of what is actually possible come next month.
Yeah, and there's also potential for sell the news. The market gapped up on the election because we went from potentially having tax hikes on everything to potentially having tax cuts on everything. And then you add in the DOGE, which is trying to make government more efficient and effective, which I've been yelling and screaming about for about 15 years. And you got some things in there that could work to the benefit. So something to watch. The market's up nicely since then. So I'm being a little bit more cautious in here, a little bit more careful. I'm not worried about inflation. Remember, we were the ones that said inflation, most of it came from printing to $9 trillion. And now that the printing is going the other way, the inflation rate has come down markedly. The problem is the higher prices. That's going to be a little bit more difficult on coming down on so many areas, especially things like insurance and food and things like that. And that's got to be watched very closely.
Gary Culpom, President Culpom Capital Management and Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. Find him online, GaryK.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, choosing between a hotel or vacation rental for your next trip.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday, part two, with family travel on the rise. How do you decide if a hotel or vacation rental is the best option for your next trip? Joining us with some key advice is Julie Lofrady, travel expert with Booking.com in Providence, Rhode Island. Julie, thank you for joining us today. And if you got some little ones in tow coming along on your vacation, whether you're flying or driving to a destination, Airbnb or VRBO versus hotel room is probably the big debate you have about what really makes economic sense, especially if you've got three or four kiddos in tow. So what's a good rule of thumb, Julie?
Well, vacation rentals are gaining popularity, especially with those families. They offer some big perks: extra space, privacy, home-like feel, maybe a full kitchen to cook up some meals, you know, saving money. Every dollar adds up. So this is a big one that families are looking at heading into 2025.
Now, in my experience, we became Airbnb people versus a hotel when our kids were really young, just because you had your own place. You were not in a hotel room. So if a young child began crying in the middle of the night or wanted room to crawl around, they could definitely do that in the Airbnb, and you felt like you weren't waking other people up. But back then, Airbnbs were a relative bargain, and it seems like the economic world changed after COVID-19, and everybody wanted a vacation rental, and they stayed away from hotels.
Well, we're seeing certainly a lot more interest back with the vacation rental market. You know, these houses have come really just a long way with marketing their amenities. You know, you can find rentals with private pools, game rooms, outdoor grills, pet-friendly options, and it's very easy now to search them all. So I use Booking.com. There's a bunch of filters, so you can kind of narrow down your choice based off maybe your budget or location. And a big one for me is that fully equipped kitchen, because I want to save on my meals.
And then, obviously, there are a number of different cost considerations that you put in, you know, hotel versus a vacation rental. You do have that fully equipped kitchen in the vacation rental, but at the same time, that means you got to go to the grocery store. And if you're going down south from the Midwest at wintertime, before you check into your vacation rental, you got to swing through Publix and buy a bunch of, you know, loaf of bread, snacks and stuff for the week, as opposed to a hotel where maybe one or two meals are complimentary as part of your stay.
Well, you're definitely going to see pros and cons no matter where you go on vacation, no matter what you book, a hotel, vacation rental, or maybe crashing at a family or friend's place. I think it's gotten so much easier, though, for the vacation rental crowd with the rise of these food delivery services, and really everything's just so easy to get to your doorstep. So, you know, I think folks are going to be looking at vacation rentals as maybe just a budget-friendly alternative. I mean, you can go in with a few other families, split the difference, and it's a fun time.
And then when it comes to booking a vacation rental, is there a really good time to get a deal, or does it really kind of depend on the ebbs and flows of demand at a particular time of year and in a particular location?
No, this is a great question. You know, I'm near the ocean side, and if you want that perfect summer vacation home, you need to book soon. So a lot of the I would say, you know, more popular options for vacation rentals, they may book up quickly. So the farther in advance you can plan that out, the better off you will be. But certainly from time to time, you're going to see price dips. It is an ebb and flow, but certainly in vacation rentals may be a little more pricey if you're going to travel around peak times.
Julie Lofrady, travel expert with Booking.com, based in Providence, Rhode Island. Thank you for the tips on this Travel Tuesday. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, Taco Bell taps into a so-called dirty soda trend. Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. It's 12:50.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Taco Bell is testing a new concept that focuses on beverages, offering milkshakes and coffee while also tapping into the popular dirty soda trend. Joining us to explain is Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach based in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And of course, you've been around restaurants and bar service for a very long time. So I'm sure someone has told you, or maybe you have witnessed yourself, somebody drinking all of the stuff that goes into the rubber thing on the end of the bar while they're making their cocktails, and someone is eventually goaded into drinking all of that stuff. And it sounds like the dirty soda trend is the non-alcoholic version of that.
It absolutely is. And this is a real boon to, you know, the fast food restaurants and other restaurants, is that they now have really a fun beverage that kids can drink, people who don't want to drink alcohol. It's really going to add to their overall gross sales, because people will absolutely be coming in just for that. And it's only soda with a number of different additives, really.
And this is something that you can't make this up, folks. This is something that got its start in Utah because it's a fun way to jazz up your beverages while also staying on the good side of Mormon doctrine. That's where this whole thing began.
Yeah, and it's been very popular in Utah for, you know, a decade or more. I mean, and you're right. It's it was a great creative outlet for that group to have a fun beverage, go out, enjoy it, try a bunch of different ones, and it has no alcohol at all. So it is a staple in Utah.
The original dirty soda made with Diet Coke, heavy cream, coconut-flavored syrup, and lime, similar to an egg cream but with flavored soda instead of seltzer water. This will be the basis of the Live Mas Cafe in San Diego. And from a business perspective, this Live Mas Cafe sounds like the Taco Bell / Yum Brands answer to Cosmix, the McDonald's beverage cafe, which opened in the southwest suburbs not too long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives a lot more choices. It's going to be something fun for kids. And of course, being able to use the word dirty soda is still in question, right? There's a lawsuit going on with that. But people are going to come up, they'll use it for a while, come up with something else. But they're going to have these great new drinks. It's going to be very creative. And of course, in the restaurant business, we're going to take the dirty soda, add liquor to it, and do something else that's creative.
Now, how much of this is based on social media traffic, and how in tune does the restaurant industry as a whole have to be with TikTok trends and deciding, well, this is something that we can actually monetize, and this is something that's gaining traction, but we can't really do anything with it?
Yeah, and you bring up TikTok, and that really is what is pushing this trend. Because, you can watch people make it and see all the different things they put into it. And somebody in the restaurant business got smart very quickly and said, hey, you know, we could do this. It's very easy. We have all the ingredients. We just never thought about putting them together like this before. So it is very social media driven.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.